FreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're joined this segment by Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director at the Center for a Secure Free Society. I'd like to ask you right now about a particularly, I guess, compelling and interesting case in Argentina, the assassination of Alberto Nisman, who was special prosecutor for the 1994 bombing of the Jewish Cultural Center in Argentina. Now, assassination of a special prosecutor is a bad and crazy thing anyhow, but this was Iranian-related, at least from the initial bombing was conducted by Hezbollah at Iran's, payment and direction. Can you give us at least the lay of the land for the current state of both Nisman's death and Iran's involvement in the whole situation?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, thanks, Jim, for having me on. It's always a pleasure. Just like you said, this is a very crazy case that essentially we're a year out from the assassination of Alberto Nisman. However, the government of Argentina has yet to declare it a murder or yet to declare the cause of death. They actually, a prosecutor in Argentina actually put it up before a federal court saying there was enough evidence to declare it a homicide. But just recently, and when I say recently, I say within the last couple of weeks, that federal court shot it down, said there's not enough evidence to say it's a homicide. So it goes back to the magistrate, and now we're back to square one. There is no determination on the cause of death. But like you, I've looked at some of the evidence. It's clear to me that he was killed. Now the question is who killed him. But one of the things, I just came back from Argentina not too long ago, and inside Argentina, particularly in Buenos Aires, a lot of the conversation is really about the local crime scene. You know, who was in the apartment, who was next to him, who did he talk to, who was sleeping with, the whole drama of the local murder mystery. But that's not the only question I think that needs to be asked. And any murder or any crime like this, one of the first questions you ask is who benefited from his death. And in that kind of scenario, when you try to establish the motive, that's where I think Iran becomes a bigger player. Because obviously there's no evidence to suggest that Iran was involved in his murder. But when you talk about who benefited from his death, Iran is a prime suspect, primarily because he wasn't just any everyday prosecutor in Argentina. He didn't have 20 cases under him. He had one case. He was a special prosecutor that was looking at one case, the horrific terrorism case in Argentina, the AMIA case that you described that killed 85 people and injured over 300. And he was investigating that for 10 years and pointing to Iran. So to me, it's very clear that Iran at least had a motive to get rid of him, and arguably, I think they benefited from his death because now he's dead, but his work has died with it.
And so they haven't replaced him. Is anything going forward on that case? Because just the numbers, people need to pay attention for just a second and realize 85 dead and 300 injured in this hemisphere by a bombing conducted by President Obama's Partners for Peace, the Iranians. That should be horrifying. And, you know, the fact that they have that foothold in Argentina, the fact that there is Hezbollah activity in Mexico, this is not a Middle East only problem. They are definitely entrenched in these areas. So is anything going to be done in Argentina?
Well, we hope so. One of the things I think that's interesting is that this time, at the time of his death, at the time that Nisman was actually pursuing the investigation, he was escalating his strategy. He started to produce more reports. He started to make another criminal case against the president for offering impunity to the Iranians, and started to create this strategy of escalation at a very inconvenient time for Iran. Because remember, this is late 2014, early 2015, and what was going on in the international context, which was the nuclear negotiations. Iran was knee-deep in the nuclear negotiations, and arguably that was the tensest period of the negotiations. They got, if we remember, it got extended multiple times before they reached the final agreement in July of 2015. One of the things that I learned in the course of my research was that Nisman had a strategy. His strategy was to take the AMIA case before the United Nations, to take it to the international community, and to use the nuclear negotiations as leverage. Because Nisman knew that in this period that Iran was arguably having differences over its nuclear program with six of the world great powers, he can actually use the AMIA case as additional leverage to say, look, if you want to gain that international legitimacy that you're claiming for, then you have to respond to this. This is a stark reminder of your history with international terrorism. And obviously, I think he had a strategy to do that, a legal strategy. And perhaps maybe that's not why he's no longer with us.
Yeah, it seems to me that in every case where Iran's bad deeds, bad dealings, and overall bad actions were brought into play during the Iran deal, they seem to be papered over by the major powers and hidden and lied about as opposed to being dealt with. And it sure seems like that might be one of the problems that Niesman ran into was not only did the major powers not want to have more of Iranian bad actions brought to light, but the Iranians certainly didn't. Is there anything now? You wrote a piece calling for the U.S. to help Argentina in solving this case. Is there any possibility of doing that, given the Iranian connection and at least during the Obama administration, his desire to keep the Iranians in play?
Well, Jim, I think you know as well as anyone that in this current environment, political environment, in most of the problems when it comes to trying to initiate any actions to neutralize Iran's nefarious activities, pretty much stops at the executive level. And there's some congressional stuff that can be happening. Obviously, there's some local stuff, maybe some tactical things, but there's no comprehensive strategy. The administration obviously has not been very open to have any comprehensive strategy, particularly on this issue, on Iran, Latin America. They have really not had a wide audience or receptive ear to this type of information or this type of problem set. And I think one of the things that's complicated is the Argentine government, while it's a much more U.S.-friendly government, it's a government that's trying to change basically more than a decade of bad economic policies, bad security policies, and trying to fix the country. However, they're looking at the U.S. more for leadership. And unfortunately, in this day and age, if the Argentines look to the U.S. for leadership and say, what do we do with this Iran problem, the U.S. is going to tell them, go ahead and business with Iran. That's the conversation right now, is where Iran's going to come back into Latin America with more legitimate business. And it's important to note, and this also came out in the research that I did, the last time they had arguably this kind of legitimacy where they were under intense pressure of international sanctions was during the 80s and 90s, the same time before the AMIA attack. And their only legitimate link at that time to Latin America was the beef trade. And what did they do? They exploited their only legitimate link to finance the terror attack.
Let's move on to another regional neighbor of ours, Colombia, who it seems has come to some sort of agreement to announce a ceasefire with what is a 52-year conflict with their rebels. Do you think that is a legitimate ceasefire or some kind of positive motion?
Listen, I think, in Colombia is a very complicated situation, the peace agreement that they're trying to negotiate with the FARC. I mean, I think we all want peace. I mean, I don't think anyone's against peace. I don't think anyone doesn't want that. The question is at what cost? What I worry about is that there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what the FARC is, not just inside Colombia, but within the region. People look at the FARC as just an old communist insurgency that's trying to take power from the government, and they got diminished, and they're willing to put down their arms. Okay, well, that's half the problem. The other half is they become a major transnational criminal organization. The FARC isn't just present in Colombia, and arguably they're more present in other countries throughout the region, and even the world. They're in Europe. They're in Argentina. They're in Mexico. They're all over the place because they're still knee-deep in the business of drug trafficking, arguably one of the most wealthiest foreign terrorist organizations on our foreign terrorist organization list. So the question is, okay, one thing is if FARC is going to put down the weapons, the other thing, are they going to stop getting in the business of drug trafficking? And I haven't heard anything about that. That hasn't even been discussed. That hasn't even been put down. And I would argue to say they will never do that because that would cease their power and their only leverage that they had in this negotiation. And I don't see that. So what I worry is that the FARC is actually rebuilding itself. They're gaining political legitimacy and they're rebuilding their military presence in different parts of the country. And arguably that's going to put them in a more powerful position to make stronger demands down the line.
Well, thanks very much. We've been speaking with Joseph Heumeier, Executive Director at the Center for a Secure Free Society. That's going to wrap up Secure Freedom Radio for today. This is Jim Hansen, Executive VP of the Center for Security Policy. I've been sitting in for my boss, Frank Gaffney, who will rejoin you tomorrow.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.